My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/campaign to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/campaign. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Is it time to reimagine your future? The right business skills may make a difference in your career. At Capella University, we offer a relevant education that's designed to focus on what you need to know in the business world. We'll teach professional skills to help you pursue your goals, like business management, strategic planning, and effective communication. And you can apply these skills right away. A different future is closer than you think with Capella University. Learn more at capella.edu.
In this episode, Hugh Slater, COO at Travelberg, emphasizes why CFOs can never communicate enough, shares his experience of guiding Travelberg through the existential challenge of the pandemic, and emphasizes why Travelberg and Soldo can liberate finance teams from the traditional costly burden associated with business travel. Hi, I'm Ross, and this is the CFO Playbook, where each week you'll get insights from world-class financial leaders to help you grow your company, yourself, and face the challenges required of today's CFO. Before we jump into the interview, we want to invite you, our listeners, to head to our show notes to find a link to our listener survey. We want to learn about how to make the CFO Playbook even better. As a thank you, you'll have the opportunity to win your choice of an iPad or a Samsung Galaxy Tab S7. We would love your feedback. Hugh, thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
Good afternoon, Ross. Good to see you.
Great to see you too. Hugh, I'd love to start. So obviously now you're Chief Operating Officer at Travelberg, but not too distant past, you were of course CFO there, and then you had a really interesting journey towards that role of CFO. So I'd like to understand a bit about how you ended up being, first of all, the CFO at Travelberg, and when you were starting out, was that always the plan?
Yeah, so I'll have to go back a very long way to begin the journey. So got into finance by accident is the honest truth. So I was always pretty good at maths and sort of science at school, and was lucky enough to study astrophysics at university. And then certainly in the UK, you do the whole second year milk round thing, going around handing out CVs to anyone that's willing to take one from you, frankly. And I happened to bump into a guy from British Telecom, and we started talking about rugby. And at the end of the conversation, he's like, look, you may as well give me your CV. Anyway, like, we've had a good chat. So I hand over my CV, and then, you know, 2 days later, I had a phone call about joining their assessment centre for the finance graduate scheme. And long story short, joined them, spent actually a decade at British Telecom. Mm-hmm. And for me, finance was just a way into business. It was just a route into understanding business better. And I never imagined sort of 20 years later that I'd still be in finance. So that was the way in, and spent a decade at British Telecom. It was a wonderful experience in that it's a huge organization. So every time you change jobs, it's like changing company. You get scale really quickly, which means you're doing very hard, very complex things with lots of people far earlier in your career than you have any right to do, frankly. So there's a lot of learning and development that goes on, and surrounded by wonderful people. So did that for a decade, but never saw myself as a sort of career person in BT. I didn't see myself sort of rolling through to retirement there. And I always had a passion for technology. So shipped from BT and joined Box as they were expanding internationally pre-IPO. So joined them doing finance and operations, actually, in the UK office there. Did that for a few years. And then became CFO at Typeform, where I was for a couple of years. That was my first CFO job. And then Typeform and Travelberg are both in Barcelona. So sort of left them and joined the rocket ship that is Travelberg as CFO. And that's it. But I think the common theme there is just running towards really hard things. Surround yourself by great people and run towards hard things. And from the beginning, joining BT all the way through to now, that's basically what I'm trying to do.
And the I find the physics background particularly interesting that way, because that choice, whether it was informed or not, because we're very young people, if you're choosing a university degree, and often you have no clue and very bad counselling. Yeah. I certainly had that. But the choice of physics, I can just imagine you thinking, go down the path of like quantum mechanics, or shall I go and actually try and roll out the next generation of broadband with BT?
Yeah, that's right. And honestly, I kind of stumbled into physics as well, which is a common theme maybe in this, in that I never saw myself being a PhD and being an academic in the end, but I was fascinated by astrophysics in particular. Read Stephen Hawking's and just got really geeky about it when I was at school. But what physics and astrophysics gave me is just a way of looking at the world, a way of taking really complicated things and breaking it down into first principles and then trying to piece it back together in a structured way. And that's definitely stuck with me all the way through my career, whether it's thinking about operations or thinking about finances. Just this looks really mind-blowingly complex, but somewhere underneath it is going to be a bit of simplicity. So let's try and look for that. And astrophysics definitely gave me that. And you're right, like I had no idea why I was doing it, but in the end, it's taught me a lot. In hindsight, it taught me a lot, and it certainly served me well throughout my career.
So that point about first principle thinking, it's so often used, and maybe one of the famous proponents of it is Elon Musk, another physics grad. Yeah. You're in good company there. But with that, like how does that work? Like, because I get the idea in principle, you say there's something complex, a complex problem, but we want to simplify it and break it down to first principles. Most people would understand that idea, but then putting that into practice is really difficult. So how do you use that? How do you apply that? Or even when you've got people on your team that maybe are not as familiar with it, how do you encourage that type of approach in the way that they solve problems?
Yeah. So the first part, how do I do it? I just ask myself why an awful lot. Like, why is this happening? And usually there's 1,000 answers to the why, but you're looking for the main one and you just keep asking why until you find it. And I have a tool set, right? So in my notes, I have a list of kind of questions that I ask myself, and I use the notes to remind myself to keep asking those questions. So it's not complicated. And in fact, it's probably the fact that I like simplicity. I like things to fit into a box, right? That kind of drives me to naturally ask those questions of situations that I come across. And then how do I do it with a team? I think it's similar. It's the journey from strategy to tactics is just asking how. You start with a strategy and say, how are we going to deliver that? Well, there's 1,000 options, but what are the 3 best ones? Okay, well, how are we going to deliver those 3 things? Mm-hmm. And just keep asking how until you get down to a tactic that you can actually deliver, right? An action that goes on. So it's not that complicated. It's just, you know, you just keep asking either how on the way down or why on the way back up. If somebody's doing a bit of work, or why are you doing that? Okay, if you don't have a good why to it, you're never going to connect your action to the strategy, in which case, you know, just how and why, same question in different directions, but ultimately you'll get to something very simple, hopefully, otherwise you've gone on the wrong path.
And then I guess seeking that simplicity, is that something that as an approach you brought in and utilized when you were leading finance at Box and Typeform, and then most recently at TravelPerk?
Hopefully, yeah, because I think certainly my experience, human nature, and definitely ambitious leaders or ambitious people take on more than they can deliver, right? And breaking that down into simplicity and asking those how and why questions, you often find, actually, it's a really good idea. But when you say why, it takes you on a path that doesn't at all achieve our goals for the year or for the next 3 years, right? So bringing that simple framework in allows you to focus the entire organization. So whether it's company strategy and therefore OKRs as a consequence, or whether it's your team structure and what's important for the team, just that kind of one or two tools really help you focus. And thankfully, velocity has become a bit of the vernacular at TravelPerk. So velocity is speed. And this is very physics, right? So I'm kind of chuckling to myself as I say it, but it's speed plus direction, which we say speed plus focus, right? So we all have to be going in the same direction and just keep repeating that, you know, back to the organization. And it just makes people stop and think, oh, actually, am I moving in the same? I might be going really fast, right? But I might be going really fast in the wrong direction. And that's not velocity. So we talk a lot about velocity. So it's just another tool. It's a very simple tool to help people move forward as in the right direction as fast as possible.
I think that's a really interesting idea, because velocity, as you describe it, with that direction, it's very easy when you've got one moving part. But when you're trying to orchestrate many moving parts across an organization, and I know TravelPerk is growing incredibly, so your complexity is probably growing in a non-linear fashion as an organization. So trying to maintain that common sense of direction and orchestrating that must be hugely challenging.
Not if you make it simple. So of course it's hugely challenging, but the challenge here is entropy, it's distraction. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think the job of leadership, which I've certainly got wrong in the past, and I'm sure I'll get wrong again in the future, but it's saying no. I think Steve Jobs kind of famously said, you've got to say no to the 999 good ideas to say yes to the one great one. And that's what it is. So you've got to set that direction, and then you've got to keep saying no to good ideas that keep popping up. So we spend a lot of time, and I actually really enjoy it. So we spend a lot of time thinking about kickoff for the year. So we have a company kickoff for the year. Mm-hmm. We do it on a hub basis, but we all come together and the leadership team and the board help us, you know, position the strategy to the company. Then we have end of week rituals. So we have company all hands every Friday. And again, we're trying to repeat, what's the vision? What's the mission? What's the OKR for this quarter? It's just that constant repetition to keep aligning people, right, to keep that direction where it needs to be. And then I think it's Frank Slootman says, sort of raising the bar constantly. So once you set the direction, that's half the equation. The other half is speed. So why next week? Why not tomorrow? Mm-hmm. Right? Why are you hiring a junior and not a senior? Maybe we could get 10x out of it from that slight tweak. So, but that's just a constant thing, right? It's not complicated. Doesn't mean it's easy, but it's not complicated. It requires a lot of effort to just push this entropy, put this distraction to the side and get your head down.
And from working with the TravelPerk team, which we'll touch on later on, I can definitely sense that desire to do things next week rather than next month, which is refreshing to be part of. In the point of like a finance role and finance leadership is that there's always this delicate balance, because it's the easiest thing in the world to set incredibly ambitious targets that investors love, but then actually it needs to feel achievable to the team.
Yeah.
And so you want to stretch them, but you also want it to be achievable so that they maintain that motivation. But also then there's a slightly longer term play, again, which TravelPerk I think have been very forward thinking on from what I've heard, and I'd love to get your perspective on it later, but that you want to not just get people to the next target, but allow them to sustainably achieve target after target after target, and then not burn people out. So how do you, and how have you tried to, as a leader in TravelPerk, strike that balance?
Well, a lot of feedback is the answer. So we set goals. We do what I call catchball, right? So the leadership team sit in a dark room, you know, dark room's a bit stupid, but we have a lot of context from just day to day. We take that. We then go into a dark room, set targets, but we don't communicate those targets broadly. We hand those down in the catchball thing. We throw the ball to the extended leadership team and ask for their feedback. Does this make sense? Have we missed something? Is there context that's not right? Is the target just ridiculous and our ivory tower isn't giving us the 360 view we think it is? And then they throw the ball back to us and then we finalize. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's how we go about doing it. Doesn't mean we'll always agree. It's healthy to have that conflict and maybe we'll still add a bit more onto the target. But you're never going to be too far wrong if you do it that way. And again, I've made the mistake of before of, yeah, we'll just set a target and it's fine if we miss it. Well, it's not fine if you miss it completely. If you miss it by 10%, maybe that's okay. Miss it by 50%, it's very demoralizing. Thinking back to my career, where did I learn this sort of target setting framework from? I remember at British Telecom when it's the group and then divisions and divisions under divisions and divisions under divisions under, like it's just chaos, but everyone that sits above you in that hierarchy, they have cover, right? So they always set you a target that's slightly higher than the target they have. And it was the worst thing in the world. You would miss your target by 5%. Well, you can do that as a public company. You might miss it by 1%, let's say. But the person above you is over the moon because actually you overachieved by 1% compared to their targets. You're not getting a bonus and your whole team feels flat. but they've achieved massively and their whole executive layer get a bonus. And it was awful. I just couldn't tolerate that. And I just don't do that now. And I know it's different in sales organizations and you roll up things, but when you set company goals, we've communicated the goal to the company. You know, we're very clear, this is the ambition. That's different to the board, right? I'll be transparent with that. And we're transparent with the board. It's like, we want the feedback on the board on a goal we can achieve. We don't want to be coming back to the board every month, every quarter and saying, we're missing. It's just, there's a very bad spiral that happens there. So we set something to the board that's a committed goal. We will absolutely achieve this goal. Mm. And by the way, our internal goal is higher than that.
Yeah.
Right. Now, some boards won't like it. Some boards will like it. We have a very good relationship with ours, very transparent and supportive of that. But internally, we're all moving to the same number. There's no leadership team will get their bonus, but nobody else will. That's we'd go against our values, frankly. I think it's just being a good person is just all being in it together.
The layers of buffer is such a tricky one to get right, because you can get burned on either side. No buffer, and actually you end up saying, everyone's exposed in a way you don't want to. Yeah. Doesn't offer predictability. But if you get so much buffer, there's some line in the organization where people are happy and then people are very unhappy. And the danger is that you lose brilliant people at the very bottom.
For sure.
And I don't mean in a hierarchical sense, but in the case of sales, it could be salespeople. You can lose them because they feel as if they're not on a winning team.
I think the mistake, I hadn't thought about this until now, but thinking about it on the spot, I think the mistake is we set buffers in a hierarchical, vertical way, whereas actually what we do at TravelPerk is almost set buffers or targets, I would say, in a horizontal way. And by that, I mean, we try and allocate capital based on 70-20-10. So 10% of capital will go to moonshots, 70% will go to the kind of incrementalism, if you like. How do you go and take what you have into a new market? It's not much risk, but it requires a lot of effort. And that allows you to set targets differently, okay? So the incremental one, it's a committed target. You better hit this number. There's no innovation happening here, right? You've got to hit your number. But over here, there's massive innovation, and it might go to the moon or it might just flop, and we won't know that for a year. So we try and set our targets based on that, which I think is a much better idea than just, you know, treating everyone the same at the bottom so that the people at the top, you know, in the end get paid more money or look more successful, which I don't think is healthy.
And I presume to make that work, there needs to be a lot of trust between the people that are leading, owning those targets and receiving those targets, because it's very natural to look at the person, your peer next to you, and say, why are they only getting, you know, 5% buffer and I'm getting, you know, I'm getting 1% or whatever it might be. But you need to really have an engaged and trusting leadership team, extended leadership team, to make that work.
It's being honest, I think, is the first thing. So it's over communicating, and that's something that I could never communicate enough. I keep doing more and more and just think I'm still not communicating enough. I need to, you know, share more context, get other people to share what they're doing between themselves. It's not always up and down. It should be left and right as well. And I think once you get everyone on the same page, there's none of this finger pointing. It's like, well, I understand Jane, probability of success is 1%. So I understand why her target looks like that. And John, the probability of success should be 99%. So I understand why his target. But that just comes with, and it's not, so you could just say transparency. I'm trying to avoid saying transparency because I think it's an overused tool. I think transparency, extreme transparency, goes back to the entropy and distraction. If you're just transparent about everything, not everyone needs to know everything. You're wasting people's time. So it's about the right communication, the right time, and the right level. And that requires a lot of work. It's not complicated, but it requires a lot of work.
We've had several guests on that have alluded to it, but one in particular that was talking about the importance of being present for their team and communicating. And that this applied both pre-COVID and during COVID and post-COVID as we're reaching it now, or close to reaching it. But he was just talking about that because that for him, that required quite a concerted amount of energy to put in. He said, like, when he got home from work, his wife knew that for the first hour, he just needed to go and like sit on the couch or just have a bit of like alone time so that he could almost like recharge. Because whether you subscribe to it or not, the idea of like, are you energized by being around others and engaging that communication, or is that, does it deplete you? And I think that's sometimes what comes up, particularly with CFOs, the nature of a lot of the core work was something that's very deeply analytical, which is often, and your energy goes into the problem. And where something like communication, it's a very different dynamic.
Definitely. I can get my wife in here now. She'll say the same thing. And she learned very early when we're still dating, when I was back at BT, it's that first 45 minutes when I come home, it's just, I just need my own space. I need to rebuild that energy for sure. I do find it hard, but also I found COVID exceptionally hard being in isolation. So yeah. There's a big difference, I think, for me is I do get energy from being around people, right? So just being in physical proximity to people, I find very, very energizing. But the having to force yourself to engage with people, force yourself to communicate really well, it's really hard. It requires a lot of practice.
And so that touches on actually the way that you approached it during COVID, because you will have had an approach before COVID. And at that time, were you based in Barcelona? I mean, I know you have a fantastic culture and office there, so I'm sure it was very vibrant. And then you switched to COVID. And then, so not only do you have the challenge of motivating the team by COVID, but you're in the travel industry and all travel's almost gone to zero overnight, a scenario that you could never have predicted. So again, at that time, you were CFO, I presume. So how did you then manage that extremely challenging time?
We had a board meeting the week, or maybe 10 days before lockdown started. Mm-hmm. And so this is, I guess, mid-March 2020. So until maybe 3 weeks before, it just wasn't a thing. You kind of heard about something in China's happened. It just wasn't a thing. And then you get into the beginning of March and Italy starts to kind of bubble over and there's some lockdowns. So it takes a long while to prepare a good board pack. So we'd prepared this board pack really not talking about COVID at all. And then it got to the weekend before the board meeting. And actually, we've got a WhatsApp group, the leadership team. It's like, guys, we need to get together. Like, we can't go into the board meeting and not kind of address this elephant in the room that's just appeared out of nowhere, right? So we did that. And from the CFO perspective, obviously, it was about cash. Right. It's about, if this really goes bad, we've got a beautiful office in Barcelona. So there's loads of overheads going. I think at the time I had 450 employees. If revenue goes to zero and our cost base stays the way it is, this is going to be a serious problem. Even though we had a very healthy balance sheet, so loads of cash on the balance sheet. Thankfully, we'd raised capital sort of in the year before. But still, you don't want to be staring down zero revenue and massive cash burn indefinitely. So we did some scenario planning, in fact, ridiculous scenario planning, because you just don't know. So it's how long would it go on for? How deep would the cuts be? Would the impact be? And we got it wrong on every account, by the way. So it shows how useless that was. But we put a lot of thought into it and therefore knew what we were going to do, took it to the board. And we kind of said, we're going to take this in two phases because we don't know how long it's going to be. We'll do all the variable costs as quickly as possible. We'll cut marketing. We'll stop new hires. Just anything that kind of trims fat, if you like, but doesn't get into muscle. Like, we'll obviously do that. And then we said, look, if it's really bad and we have to, then we'll come back in. I think we had weekly updates to them. And then we'll come back in 2 months with a new plan that says we'll start going into muscle, basically. So we had a pretty solid framework, and my job as CFO, I think, was to obviously drive some of the thinking around it. But it's business strategy then. It's not, I mean, this isn't finance strategy. This is absolutely business strategy. You're trading off, well, if it bounces back in 6 months and you've fired everyone, you're going to have nobody there to sell and nobody to service your customers. So that doesn't make sense. And what's the signal to the market? Because everyone else is going to be trimming down, and maybe it's an opportunity, not a risk. And so it's not a finance strategy. And I believe this overall in finance, whether you're in crisis or not, it's never just a finance strategy. It's never just a people strategy. It's a company strategy. And then how do you do that? And then there's a finance part and a people part and a product part. So that's how we did it. And we worked very hard as a finance team, definitely, but also as a leadership team, an extended leadership team, to do all of this scenario planning, to kind of build an operational plan that would see us through, you know, phase one. And then we repeated it for phase two. So that's kind of how we approached it and how the framework that I used to approach it. And again, it's fairly obvious so it's high impact stuff that's low, as in high cost saving, low impact to the long-term business. That's where you start. And it's just a sliding scale on how hard this is going to be to bear going forward. So we got through that, but we made some pretty bold decisions, I would say. So once we trimmed that fat, if you like, down, we then made some big decisions. So it's like, actually, doesn't matter if this lasts 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years. Fundamentally, we believe that in real life connection has to exist. Humanity is built on communities of working or being together in real life, and we didn't think that would ever change. So if that's true, and I guess this is kind of the Amazon thing, right? People always want great customer service and low cost, so that's can be forever true. We kind of thought with that mentality, well, we've got to keep building product. This is a 100-year journey to build the best product in this space. So let's keep doing it. And we actually doubled the size of the engineering team throughout COVID, which is outrageous. I mean, it's so counterintuitive, but it was a strategy. Like, we all sat down. It was a calculated risk that we were willing to take. And in the end, it's borne out extremely well. So there was things like that. There was the acquisitions that we made. Mm-hmm. But you can only do that if, A, you've done the hard bit of taking all of the nice-to-haves out to begin with and really got to a lean organization. You can only do it if you've built the trust with your board and your investors, right? And thankfully, we had a couple of years of really good execution that people believed in us as a company and as a leadership team. And then slowly but surely, you, even through the crisis, you're executing these things. And people are like, wow, actually, there's something really special here that's going on. And then you can make some big bets, like the Click Travel acquisition in the UK was a pretty big one to acquire our biggest competitor over there. But it, in the end, it's taken a lot of advice from a lot of people. I have a very good board with lots of experience, and they helped. They didn't agree with everything that we did. There were some tough challenges. And I think that's the role of a leadership team and the CFO to make sure there are those tough challenges. Mm-hmm. Some of the board would have had us certainly make redundancies, which we didn't do. And we're very happy in retrospect, and they're very happy in retrospect that we knew what we were doing and we stuck to it.
And I see like so many parallels to some of the experiences that we went through as well. And in our case, we had Carlo, our CEO and founder, and because he'd been through many crises before, nothing was like this crisis, but there were some experiences that he drew from, like the dot-com crash and the financial crisis and so forth. And so that having someone that built companies and had that level of leadership, and then as a leadership team was able to say, listen, we use the phrase that you said as well, is like, of course you need to trim back, but you don't want to cut through muscle and into the bone, because you end up with no company left. And it's extremely difficult. But having that leadership to have a healthy debate with the board, because the board's natural thing is preserve cash at all costs. And it's really interesting that you mentioned that it's no longer a budget or a finance plan. It's a company strategy, and in many cases, a survival plan to take on the unprecedented, which is fascinating.
Yeah, and our plan was split into three, really. But the first one was survive, right? There was kind of three goals, and survive is the first one. And in the end, we would have, I wrote an internal note to the pit crew. We call the teams that roll up to me, we call ourselves the pit crew, and wrote an internal note a few months afterwards. Said, this was the process. This is what we went through. And we had to think about, I had to think about redundancies, right? In a spreadsheet way, you have to think about all of these things, all of these eventualities. And I should have been fired if I didn't think about it. And thankfully, in the end, that's not the decision that we wanted or needed to make. But you have to go through all of these things, because survival is the most important thing. Mm. And it's pretty brief. And nobody joins a VC-backed company, right? Certainly not after Series A. Nobody expects to be thinking about that. It's all up and to the right. That's the expectation. And that's just not the reality. I mean, look at some of the public companies now, the Pelotons and even the Facebooks down for them. I think it's just a level of maturity that you've got to bring to the table. I'm also incredibly privileged to be in a leadership team that we were in the travel industry, a tech company in the travel industry, so definitely not a COVID winner. When you think about what was going on in the market, there was a lot of COVID winners in the SaaS space there. So a lot of the wider company could have jumped ship, a lot of leadership team could have jumped ship, but we didn't. We as a company didn't do that. You didn't see this huge attrition, which is remarkable, and we managed to double size the engineering team. So we were doing something right that was sort of keeping people motivated, keeping the belief high, the sense of belonging high. And I do think it's that long-term vision and mission of bringing people together in real life. And certainly COVID, nobody felt closer to their family after doing a quiz every Friday night on Zoom, right? It was very transactional, because that's what VC video conferencing is. But in real life, that day when you could go in there, down the pub and meet your mates again, or go to Sunday lunch with your parents, it was, oh my god, thank goodness, right? You know, finally, we're back here. And that's where the emotional connection comes from. And that's the same at work as it is in your personal life.
And that point on the return of, if not normality, because it is a different world in many different respects, but the return of connection and people moving again, we're seeing it all across the continent. And even within Soldo, one of the things we saw, a huge proportion of our customer base used Soldo for traveling, for some form of traveling, often connected to commercial activities, but sometimes even the maintenance of machinery in factories, which actually never went away during COVID because factories still had to run. So that was actually quite an interesting thing to observe. But so we saw this huge rebound last year, like our T&E related spend tripled, and we expect that to continue even more so this year. And I'm sure you've seen similar trends all across the world. So it leads us on to actually, of course, what you see is like the travel perks plan and some of the observations on travel that you see for this year and beyond now that you're coming out the other side.
The vast majority is more of the same. Okay, so even before COVID, and it was an interesting stat that we didn't have to think about before COVID, but was true before COVID, is 1 in 5 trips booked on the platform were what we call parallel trips. It was two people within the same company doing the same trip together. Okay, so particularly in sort of the target markets that we both have, it's high tech or consulting, or tend to be sort of early adopters of technology. Although definitely the more traditional companies adopted it through COVID, but this was already happening. People weren't all in the same office all the time. So travel was always about bringing people together, whether it's more traditional, a salesperson with a customer or a consultant with a customer, but it was also this internal travel. And we've seen that increase. People have gone more hybrid. Everyone left London, right, or left Edinburgh, moved to the suburbs, and now they're sort of coordinating coming back together once a week or 2 days every 2 weeks, or maybe it's an offsite at the end of the quarter. So we're seeing much more of this, the globalization of the workforce as facilitated by Zoom and good internet connection is actually driving a very different type of business travel that's not just point to point. It's not just salespeople traveling to see customers. So it's an incredibly exciting time. Maybe it's different inventory you're going to need. Maybe it's long stay or offsite houses that you need rather than just a hotel for the night and then you'll go to your office the next day. Maybe it's the coordination of bringing people together who might all live around the M25, but you just need to coordinate coming to the office at the same time. So is it traditional business travel? No. Is it still business travel? Absolutely, because the job to be done is coming together to achieve more, to innovate together, you know, to build those relationships. So it's an incredibly exciting time for us. The foundations are still the same. A lot of the inventories, you still need trains, you still need cars, flights, hotels. The fundamentals are the same. So that deep moat, that huge investment we've made in that technology is extremely valuable and will remain so. It's exciting to see how the world of, it's not travel, it's beyond that, it's in real life connection is evolving. It's very, very exciting.
It's interesting that the actual rise of distributed working or the massive increase of distributed working could lead to significant new forms of travel, which you wouldn't have even anticipated before. I'd never thought about it that way. And then that speaks, of course, about the fact that you have invested heavily in this platform, but then this opportunity and these new problems and certainly new needs of customers requires like other partners, other solutions, other softwares that weren't there in the past. Soldo being one of them, of course. I wanted to ask you about what role then partnerships in your ecosystem play in taking advantage of that opportunity.
Massive. It's, in fact, coincidentally, just before I joined the podcast, I was on a call talking about partnerships because it's a huge part of our future. And we just talk about being an open platform. Fundamentally, we want to be an open platform. So companies like Soldo to partner with, just being able to partner at an API level, an infrastructure level, is great for everyone, particularly in the SMB space, okay? Because what probably Soldo don't want to do, and certainly what we don't want to go and sell our solution and say, oh, by the way, take us, but you're going to have to rip out all these four other things at the same time to jam in what is a best of breed travel tool, but if we did cards or expenses, it wouldn't be best of breed, right? So we don't want to do that. We want to be an open platform. We want to have great partners like Soldo where we can go into the customer and say, you've got two innovation centers here coming to you, selling together, right? Building the best of breed. And I think the acceleration really that COVID's created, because hybrid work was happening, the globalization of the workforce was already happening, but it's accelerated massively. It has accelerated, and that's sort of driven people like me, CFOs, to look at their tools, to look at their ecosystem and say, you know, am I giving the best solution to my distributed workforce now? Because I don't want to be sending them a corporate Amex card, you know, and going through all the rigmarole of fill in this paper form. And then, like, it's just nobody wants that anymore. And even the traditional companies that sort of are finding themselves tackling this for the first time are looking around the market and they're seeing solutions like Soldo, like TravelPerk, and just takes all the friction away from them. And that's where we want to be positioned. We want to be the best in real life platform that exists out there. But we don't want to build everything. We want to partner with the world's best expense tools, corporate card tools, whatever it might be. Because I think that's how you win. Winning for us is the customer being happy. It's that seven-star service that we always talk about, right? So we can't deliver a seven-star service in travel and expense and ERPs and. That's just not what we want to do. We want to focus on that travel in real life segment and then partner with the world's best platforms for the other bits.
And so in many ways, it comes back to what you were saying earlier on, which is that the reason that you have a partnership strategy is because you're so good at saying no to the pieces that you don't want to focus on.
So yes, for sure. Travel is a $1.3 trillion market. I mean, it's just enormous. So you're not going to make a dent in it if you have two squads focused on travel and one squad focused on corporate. Like, it's just not how it's going to work. So we have to do that focus and then partner with the rest. And it's not just about us, although a lot of it is our execution ability, as in you can execute better if you focus. It's also about what's good for the customer. And I'll repeat, customers don't want to have to rip out three different things at the same time. That change management cost is massive for a CFO. And for what? For a marginal gain on two of the solutions, or maybe even a marginal loss on two of the solutions to get a gain on one? That's not how SMB mid-market companies work. Incentives are different at an enterprise level. I appreciate that. So we're not so focused on the enterprise scale, much more focused on almost bringing enterprise-grade travel solutions down to the mid-market.
And you're in the unique position for that, because you're not only a leader within TravelPerk, a tech company in the travel space, but you're also a customer of the TravelPerk platform, because your teams will manage it and use it. You'll be using many of the partner tools as well, or at least you'll have the problems that they're trying to solve. So when you look at that overall, all of the different problems that are in and around that travel experience as a CFO and having been in that position, what are the major ones that come to mind that you think that many of your peers want to and need to solve?
There tends to be two. One is, if you already have a travel management tool, odds are on your employees hate it. This is typical enterprise sort of type solutions, right? So your employees don't like it, and therefore there's a lot of leakage. So you put in a travel management solution to try and get control, visibility, reduce costs, etc. But then people are still going to Expedia to book their trips, and they'll fire an expense receipt in at the end of the month, right? So it's kind of fake control. And actually what you're doing is annoying your workforce. So that's one side. The other side is there's nothing in place and you're quite happy for people to go and use Expedia, Booking.com, et cetera, to book the travel, and then maybe using Soldo or other cards or expense solutions to bring that together for the CFO. So that's the market. That is the sum total of the travel market looks like that, basically. And we don't. So what we do is we're very proud to solve for the traveler. Right. So we'll build a consumer grade tool. You can come on it. It kind of looks like any great consumer travel product that you've ever used. Come on and you can book your flight and your car and everything that you need in one basket and check out. So for the traveler, it's great. You don't have to basically loan money to the company on your own personal credit card and then do the admin of receipts afterwards. And for the CFO or the FD, the policies built in. It's one invoice at the end of the month. It just, you can put approvals in, for example. So you don't have any of that leakage because the traveler love it. And you get all of the control that you need to speed up your month end, to allocate it to the right cost centers. It's not complicated. It's very hard to do, but it's not a complicated idea. We just came at it from a very different perspective than the traditional players in it. So I actually, the reason I know TravelPerk is when I was at Typeform, we brought Travel Perk in as a product. You know, I was sat next to our finance admin, and day in, day out, you're just constantly booking flights for people or collecting receipts or saying yes to this and no to this. And it was just a giant waste of time, frankly. Yeah. So we implemented Travel Perk, and overnight, 80% of her day was freed up to do much higher value work, which is, I think, ultimately what we all want to be doing, right? So it's a morale boost for the team and an actual higher impact for the company. And certainly, I think that's the job of any leader, and certainly the job of a CFO, is to drive up that return on investment.
And one of the things, talking about that, that has again come up as a theme, which I've found really thought-provoking, is that in freeing them up to do higher value activities, your team can move faster. And you can come back to that all-important word that you mentioned at the beginning, go back to the physics, the velocity. If you've got those right solutions, and not only do you have a more engaged team, but you can actually move faster with fewer resources as a company, which is the, I guess, is the holy grail for many CFOs.
Absolutely. It's why I believe why products like ours are being successful, because we are removing that friction, removing that effort, the manual tasks that have traditionally been done within finance teams and tolerated. There's no other way of doing it. And we're adding a huge amount of value into the office of the CFO. Mm-hmm. And I think there's all this stuff written about modern CFOs. Well, they're enabled to be modern because they're taking on tools like Travel Perk and, excuse me, and Soldo to free them up. And then your talent density in the team changes because you're employing people who you want to be creative. You have to still have an accounting background maybe, but use it in a creative way, mm-hmm. not to just follow a 9-step process from receiving a receipts for a travel trip to getting it journaled into the ERP at the end of the month.
It's fascinating to hear. And as we're drawing the interview to a close, you've moved into the COO position, but for any of your either former peers or people who are aspiring to be a CFO one day and to get into that position, what pieces of advice would you have for them so that they could be either successful in the role when it comes, or actually just be more effective as leaders within their organization if they're already in that position?
You're a leader first, and a CFO or a finance leader second. Right? That's a really important one. Why do I say that? Because sure, your job is to give a bit of coaching on accounting or make sure the technical side is done. But much, much higher value is sharing that context. It's inspiring people, telling them where you're going as a company, telling them where you're going as a team. So over-index on leadership, because the technical stuff actually can be found elsewhere. And over-index on company goals first, team goals second, right? Which is a similar theme, but I think it warrants saying. And too often you see people believe that actually to be successful, it's head to head, right? The company is over here and you have to defend your corner over. It has to be about cost or cash. Well, no, that's just a recipe for disaster. You won't survive. You won't add value. So come together, work out what is the company goal and how can the finance team support the company in delivering it. And sometimes you do have to say no, of course. That's part of the job. But saying no when understanding the goal, the ultimate goal of the company, is just a much easier conversation. So they're the two. The third would be run towards the flames. You just have to get stuck in. Don't stand back. Whether that's in your current company, go and find the hardest problem that exists in the company. Just go and help somebody get it done. And if it doesn't exist in your company, then go and find another company. Right? There's flames everywhere, but that's how you grow. That's how you attract great talent. Surround yourself by great people. It's by doing hard things, not by doing easy things. So if you want fun, I guess the last one's more about fun. My version of fun anyway, is run towards the flames.
I think it's great advice for anyone that's looking to be a CFO one day. So with that, Hugh, I'd just like to thank you for taking the time today, joining us on the podcast. It's been brilliant to hear about your experiences and your approaches as not only a CFO, but as a leader of one of Europe's most exciting tech companies.
Thank you very much, Ross. I've enjoyed it.
One last thing. We want to hear from you, our listeners, to learn how we can make the CFO playbook even better. Head to our show notes to find a link to our listener survey. As a thank you, you'll have the opportunity to win your choice of an iPad or a Samsung Galaxy Tab S7. We would love your feedback. This show is brought to you by Soldo, the brighter way to manage business spending and expenses. With Soldo, you can control every expense, track spend in real time, automate financial reporting, and then use those insights to fuel growth. Learn more at soldo.com.